What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm JR.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking, where this week we have an essay from the ever-popular Peter Cavanagh, who's written for us before, and it's on one of my favourite Doctor Who topics, JR.
Oh, good. This is actually a topic that's absolutely fundamental to sort of the You and Who books, isn't it?
Absolutely. Because I guess the You and Who books are such a reflection of Doctor Who fandom at times.
How we remember it. That's kind of the sort of basic backbone of the books, is our memories of Doctor Who. So what better topic for an essay and a podcast on You and Who Talking, but
the memory cheats.
That is what Peter has written about this time. Actually, the way this essay came about is because when we were doing Contact, we said, right, we want an essay about every single story from the entire history of the programme. But because the first book hadn't done that, a couple of people, maybe half a dozen people, sent in essays that weren't tied to specific stories just because they thought maybe we were still doing the book the way we'd done the first one. Mm. So rather than saying, look, they don't fit in with the format of the book, what I said was, well, look, why don't we slot an essay in between each of the doctors in the new series book, so they're in between Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant, say, you got a little extra something, like a little Easter egg.
Yeah, no, it was a very nice thing, actually. A palate cleanser, if you will.
Yeah, sort of something like that. And they were all essays that talked about specific things, as in this one talks about, you know, how the memory cheats or whatever. So it's very easy to just sort of slot them in and give them a reason for being there. Here's an essay about a particular aspect of the programme. So this is, as people will hear, this is Peter talking about that specific angle of the programme as understood and remembered and experienced by him.
Indeed. And I never try to spoil these essays, but what angle does he take with the memory cheats? There's a couple of different ways you can come at it, and I think he came at it in a very interesting way.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I mean, Peter's one of those interesting characters who always manages to find, you know, a way of doing something that, not necessarily that people might not expect, but that will be interesting for them to hear, and that will sort of pique those brain cells in that sort of nostalgic but also sort of analytical kind of way. He's managed to find a very good balance between those sorts of things, hasn't he?
He certainly does. Shall we have a listen?
I think we should. The last time we had him on, it was a real treat. Let's see if it is this time too.
The memory cheats. Revisiting the past, by Peter Cavanagh. The memory cheats. The memory cheats, offered a sheepish and defensive John Nathan Turner, as a hostile group of Doctor Who fans, including an early incarnation of Chris Chibnall, do you remember, gathered on live television to suggest that the latest adventures with the Vervoids weren't, in inverted commas, all that good, and that they preferred the proper stories from the glory days of their childhood. The memory cheats. It's a phrase JNT regularly used, as you'll know, and it's now oft quoted, especially by those who continue to refute it, and who gleefully and logically offer as Exhibit A their DVD collection of 1960s, 1970s, top-notch Doctor Who. They press play on their DVD, and their memories are very much up to date, they say, and have been scrupulously frisked for any trace of cheating. Now, not in full agreement, a different group of fans, often those that weren't around to see the programmes when originally transmitted, they might offer the same DVDs as their evidence to the contrary. Is this rubbish really, Doctor Who? These ropey old sets, dreadful model shots, terrible music, the dragged out and redundant episode 3. Well, there seems to be little consensus as to whether the good old days, they might be old, but were they really that good? And so here's my question. Was JNT right? Was he on the money? Does the memory cheat? As I think back to some of the golden moments in my Doctor Who viewing history, it's a plethora of exciting and thrilling memories. For example, I'll never forget the stunning sequence as Dr. Tom and others made their way deeper and further down into the TARDIS. Went on and on and on. I'm referring, of course, to the concluding episode of The Invasion of Time. Wow! I didn't sleep that night. How colossal, how big was the Doctor's time and space machine? And what about the BBC? How amazing of them to realise it for my 8-year-old eyes and ears. This wasn't a cheap day's filming in a disused hospital at all. It was the completely impossible TARDIS. And no future episode made by BBC Wales, even in the show's 50th year, would ever be able to recreate or compete with that. Similarly, don't try and tell me that the baddies in Day of the Daleks have got the wrong voices. What are you talking about? I was there in 1972. As they smashed into my childlike world, an army of Daleks attacking a house, terrifying and more numerous than any CGI flying squad in Parting of the Ways or Doomsday or whatever. You see, one can only pity BBC Wales because they have to compete with my vivid memories. People talk about Doctor Who competing with Star Wars. Actually, no. Modern Doctor Who has to compete with the exciting memories of our childhoods. Don't bother to try to convince me that Revenge of the Cybermen has poor production values. Look, okay, I got it on Betamax. But you're too late, really. It was too late. The distant memory of viewing the story, probably just the once, was hugely enhanced by the thrill-a-minute Target novel that elevated the whole adventure to a special effects epic in easy, comfortable company with the Star Wars movies that came a few years later. Now, listen carefully. It's not that I don't have a DVD player. It's not that I don't own a large DVD collection. And it's not that I've got a poor memory, but it's more this, that I believe that the impression made by an episode of Doctor Who on its original broadcast, or at times through the printed word, as we know, but this impression is more often than not the only one that really matters and the only one that really sticks. I want to suggest today that the memory doesn't cheat, but the memory sticks. It's the emotional response that I had to the story or maybe a sequence within it that remains with me indomitable. Did they shoot Planet of Evil in a real jungle? That's what I remember. I long for the next terrifying episode to air. When you're 10 years old and watching Doctor Who in colour for the first time, as I did in around about 79, 80, your jaw drops to the floor when the Nymons arrive, even in ratio 4-3. And you know what? There's nothing that a logical, rational argument at a fan meeting, convention, or on a podcast, or in Doctor Who magazine polls, years later, there's nothing that can be done about that initial impression. Now, here's the thing. Perhaps this emotional response can serve to upgrade or downgrade any episode from any era. It doesn't matter how many times I'm encouraged by fan polls and opinions that say The Caves of Androzani is the best of the best. Now, intellectually, I can agree. It's terrific. It's brilliant. I can readily appreciate the compelling script, the pacey direction, the great performances, the stunning conclusion. It all adds up to a 10. But I'm stumped, because the teenager in me is left with an impression, and it remembers the disappointment of it. The dumb, you know, magna creature, the Captain Zepp cartoon background in that lift. Remember that? Those horrible Eric Sayward deaths, and that bloke off Sink or Swim. Now, I want to love it, honestly. I don't want to be different, but the memory forbids me. It's brilliant, but it can't be anything other than disappointing. I think the same is true today. Often we say, I didn't like that episode, but when I watched it again, then I really liked it. For me, that would be the Zygon two-parter in the Capaldi era. I really appreciate that, but first viewing, deeply disappointing. The memory sticks. These days, the producers of the DVD extras have worked very hard to present captivating political backgrounds in their documentaries. To stories like The Happiness Patrol, or The Mutants, or The Sunmakers. What about the unappreciated brilliance behind the themes of ghost light or survival? But the memory sticks, not cheats. Because I disliked them at the time, so they're somehow emotionally beyond redemption. I much prefer the fan-loathed Time Flight. Yes, Time Flight. Why? Well, because it had exciting cameos of Melka and the Pteroleptil and Adric. Or what about that mind-blowing scene in Four to Doomsday when Dr. Peter catches a cricket ball in space? Don't tell me it's not good science, because I don't want science. I'm not moved by science. I want magic. I remember when the Crotons came out on DVD. I paid good money to get that on release day. I made Amazon send that to me first class, because it's passed me by that it's not very good. I was there. Maybe not back in the 60s, but during the Five Faces season, I was there when those eerie Crotons came out of the black and white mist to compete with the very best of the galaxy's meanies. Amazing. So was John Nathan Turner correct? Were those disgruntled fans in the 1980s wearing rose-tinted spectacles? Were they remembering a show that never quite aired, except in their hearts? In many ways, I think absolutely they were. But let's be careful, because it's reality, perhaps, that cheats, not the memory. Reality can cheat the fan of wonderful and cherished memories. I much preferred the giant crinoid, or the Drashig when it wasn't a glove puppet, or the Cyberman when it wasn't a giant sock. I'm staying behind the sofa for as long as I can. Why don't you join me there?
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.